All right, are you going to do video, Aaron?
I can do video.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, hold on a second. Stop recording. Start recording. All right, to get you up to speed, what that was about. I've been doing activism for a long time. You know, I've been blah, 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 doesn't matter. The main thing is, from my perspective, is Freedom's Phoenix in the late, 96 or so, we came up with the concept of Freedom's Phoenix as a social media kind of webpage before there was even existed. We had it all in our heads. It's, you know, freedom rising from the ashes of Lady Liberty's torch. If you look at some of the logos, it's a Liberty torch and the Phoenix coming out of it. The reason was, is I'm going, look, let me tell you, it's going to get bad. It's going to go, freedom's on the brink of it. It's not going to be a woohoo, and then Freedom's Phoenix will come. And it's going to be from the freedom of ones and zeros. It's going to be the ability to have access to information, and we're not being BS'd and bullshitted all the time. Well, when they start shutting down, they started shutting down all the, you know, platforms, YouTube, Facebook, you know, Google, everything. When they're doing all that, I'm going, yep, here it comes. You know, boom, the people that were the most informed, the most informative, the people that had good content, these are the ones that are going down, and all the accumulation of understanding the information we had on, like, the Federal Reserve or 9/11 or the conspiracies that go back 100 and whatever year, who cares? I'm going, this is information that I wished I had. Within 3 months, I've been up to speed and I got it. You know, I just watch, 15 YouTubes and I'm good. You know, this is what, those are the very ones that they're taking away. And I'm going, oh, hell no. I need to have where I can store data that can be available to anyone. They don't even know what it is. It's encrypted. It's on an index of, they can suck it. And even if they knew what it was, they can't take it down decentralized anyway. So a lot of these guys, these content, when they were making a lot of money on YouTube and so on, all of a sudden they just took it away. And they go, well, that's not fair. You need to have, and they should. And kind of, and I'm going, what'd you think they were going to do? You know, you're going to let you, on their stuff, let you inform the back, you know, it'll be stupid. You know, it has to be on a platform and a mechanism that they can't take it down. When you get to that, and I use the example, I go, because a lot of these guys are coders and they got a cat on their lap, I go, I need a catapult channel. I mean, I need little baby white furry kittens being catapulted into saurischian cactuses, and they can't take that footage down. When you do that, then you win. Woohoo! Now, of course, you know, I wouldn't do that, but that's not the point, you know? I need that kind of freedom. So that's why I'm advocating we're looking for the next platform. We're not making a big deal. You know, we are on all the stuff, and we broadcast on this and that and live stream and blah, 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 blah. But and when I start promotion, I'm a street activist. I'm the Ron Paul Lovolution guy with signs on every overpass. And here in Phoenix, we've been doing this for 20-something years, 30 years. Man, I get you a URL in front of your face. I will put a QR code, a little vinyl stickers, silly status, taxes are for slaves, with a QR code that goes wherever the hell I want on every gas pump in the valley. You want traffic, I will give you traffic. But I need a platform that they can't delete it from. You see my point? That is my goal. So that's what that was about. All right. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about, you're going to actually be doing elections and politics and stuff. So we're going to talk about that, which I don't have a problem with, but it's the same thing. If they can, you know, delete and screw with and, you know, corrupt and fraud the vote, well, then, you know, what's the point, you know? So we need to talk about your solution too, okay?
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Make them remember. We are not afraid!
beard and a beard and a beard here on Declare. Your independence from here in the Hancock and Phoenix, Arizona. From the BEA People Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Aaron Hamlin. Aaron Hamlin is executive director and co-founder of the Center for Election Science. He's been featured as an electoral systems expert on. Okay, damn, okay. So it's any and everybody and kind of long list. Now, a lot of media and so on, a lot of magazines, a lot. I mean, USA Today, Independent This, and Popular Mechanic, MSNBC, NPR, I mean, it goes on. Additionally, Aaron is a licensed attorney with two additional graduate degrees in social sciences. Damn. All right. About election science, which is electionscience.org. I wonder if that was easy to get. Nobody wants to be election science. All right. So you got election science. All right. Founded in 2011, the Center for Election Science is a national, nonpartisan, nonprofit dedicated to helping the world use better election systems. Assuming you guys vote, okay? If you're going to vote, let's have it work. I mean, let's do that. Let's try that. Don't even talk to me about voting unless, you know, it's going to be accurate and it's kind of will of the people thing. And doing, I mean, don't sit there and BS me. You know, and then, oh, you may choose from communist candidate A or fascist candidate B, and that's all that's allowed. I mean, you see, there's so many. This is my thing, was election law. I started, you know, Secretary of State, ran campaign 94 and in 06, and kind of required. I'm a butthead here in Arizona. They all know me about election law. 44 election laws I challenged all the way to the Ninth Circuit, made my argument, boom, I got more Ernie laws than I know what to do with. And I'm telling you, the whole time, they're thwarting the will of the people to do whatever the hell they want, I guarantee it, in every way they can, using internet, deplatforming, censoring, who gets on TV, who doesn't, who gets to see, who gets to be on the ballot, how they get on the ballot. It is a scam that Aaron Hamlin's trying to fix. All right, let's see if we can help him. We study in advance alternative voting methods and an emphasis on a method called approval voting, which we'll get in details of. We're passionate about voting methods because the collective decisions we make through voting dramatically impact our day-to-day lives. Smarter collective decisions, whether in government or in private organizations, promise to provide us all with a better quality of life. All right. What is approval voting? It's a voting method for a single winner elections. It addresses vote splitting and always allows you to vote your honest favorite without wasting your vote. Okay, we'll get into that. I'm familiar with some of this. This is my point. Collective voting, better decisions, and so on. It's kind of like you get 200 people guessing how many jelly beans in a jar. You know, one guy will say 60,000, one guy will say 3, and the average, it comes out there within a percent. It's amazing. The wisdom of the crowd, well, they don't want the wisdom of the crowd. They want to give the perception that the crowd had some wisdom, but they get to do whatever the hell it is they want to do, and they massage and do, and who gets to vote and not, and whatever, all the time. So now Aaron Hamlin has approval voting that's going to be on the ballot in the Midwest somewhere. All right, Aaron, give me your spiel. How far have you gone along? What election are we going to pay attention to and heal us? Go.
Sure. So first off, it's important to identify the problem that we have. Right now, we're forced to choose just one candidate when we have a number to choose from. That causes vote splitting when we have a number of candidates that we like. Say there's a libertarian that we really like as well. Well, in many cases, people can feel like they're throwing their vote away or they can't persuade others to vote through their own conscience. And so with approval
voting... Can you move your camera to the silo? I'm losing you a little bit.
Sure.
Or you just move over a little bit. I mean, it's kind of like a 6-inch, I think. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
With approval voting, you can pick as many as you want instead of just one. And being able to pick as many as you want means that if there are multiple candidates that you like, you can choose multiple of those candidates. If there's a libertarian that you like, and it looks like they're not going to win, well, you can support them. And if you want to, you can choose amongst the frontrunners as well to make sure you have a say in the outcome. This method also tends to elect a more consensus-style winner, whereas right now, with the vote splitting that we have, you can tend to have this pendulum effect where you get wide left and wide right alternating each elections. Rather than having a continuity of government where people can actually plan over a long term.
Well, this is continuity of government. Is that my goal? Am I looking to do, why am I doing that? What do I care? What's your goal?
We want a government that's able to be functional. And then we also want to make sure that the people who are elected to government are actually reflective of our will. rather than someone being just partisan that's not actually reflective of the electorate itself. It's also important that new ideas be able to come into play. So say a libertarian runs, that libertarian may be able to win under a certain electorate under approval voting. But if that libertarian isn't able to win, we want to make sure that their ideas are heard. And if we're using our choose one method, it's very easy to marginalize that candidate because a lot of people are going to be afraid to vote for them. But under approval voting, you can always support that candidate.
Okay, well, given the description of how this goes, I'm pulling up some of your graphics here, trying to see if there's a map or a demonstration of it. Let's take a look at that. Explain it to the people how it would work.
Sure. So and as an example of how this would play out, so in 2016, we did a poll that compared four different voting methods, including our choose one method that we use now, as well as approval voting. Now, when you change the voting method, it doesn't always change the winner, but a voting method has more jobs than that. It has its only job isn't just choosing a good candidate that represents the electorate. It also has to give a nice, accurate temperature for all the other candidates.
Okay, well, let me explain to the audience what I'm trying to get at, and you tell me where I'm wrong, okay? How it works is, let's say I have a dozen candidates for whatever thing on the ballot. I go in, and I will check the ones that I approve of. I would like this guy as probably my primary, and this guy, and the rest of them can suck it. Or I do 6 out of 12, or 2 out of 12. So the approval, who gets the most votes, because you could vote 12. I mean, everybody could vote 12, or just one, or single shot it, or something. And that has the impact of probably, with the populace, that you get everybody's first, second, or third pick. That pretty much comes out. So you have approval voting that, you know, you're one out of the 12, you know, everybody's kind of top three generally gets in, and you got more representation of what the people wanted with approval voting, that the winner was kind of semi-approved. How far off am I?
Yeah, that's pretty close. And keeping in mind that approval voting is not a ranking method. There are some ranking methods out there. This is not one of them.
Yeah, that's also ranked choice voting, and then you get, and it goes to your second. Approval is just, you know, got the most approval from the people. And why did you select that one? What made you do that?
Yeah, approval voting has a number of advantages. One is it's super easy. Being able to choose as many candidates as you want, that makes it work on the current ballots that we have. We just change the direction so that people know that they can choose more than one. It works on even the dumbest of voting machines.
So you don't have to do any hardware change or anything, just a little bit of software, whatever it got. Hell, you don't even have to change that. You just see the percentages up there.
That's right. Yeah, so it's very easy to implement. Whereas, for instance, one of the next cities that we're looking at is St. Louis. And there, they were looking, some of the folks on the ground there were looking at ranked choice voting, but it wasn't a good option for them. And they decided against it because it was going to cost millions of dollars to change the election software. Whereas with approval voting, it was going to be shovel ready.
Okay, so I remember us talking up there, and I'm going, yeah, I'm willing to try this. And, you know, I did voting initiatives in the city of Glendale here. It cost me like $1,800, and I got it on. That pissed them off. They went, what the hell just happened? We got to have some more Ernie laws, okay? Well, I'm going, all right. You know, I wanted to be able to validate it. I wanted a hand count to make sure it was accurate. Well, they sure as hell didn't want that. So if we do something like this here in Arizona, it might follow what they're already doing in other places. When we come back, Aaron's going to tell us where it's going to be on the ballot in a couple of months.
From the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. but if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the Crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery, but if they only take 50%, they call it taxation, a difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the Crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The Crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the Crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the Crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
What do you shop for?
Pirates. Rare. You know, we're definitely doing the pirate thing. Now, what I wanted to, they're seeing a lot of the graphics that you got here. But when we come back, I want to talk about the actual on-the-ballot measures that you have in the future of, and we'll see if we can, you know, help you here, get you in touch with, or we'll work with, or something. Because I would love to see this in some city, community, the whole state, whatever, whether I vote or not. I mean, this gets me a little closer to it matters, you know, because the way it is now, it doesn't matter. I don't care, you know. So why did you pick this particular method?
So we picked this method because, one, it's easy to implement, and then secondly, it has a bunch of features in its performance. It tends to elect a more consensus-style candidate, and it gives third parties and independents a much more accurate reflection of support so that their voices can get heard and they're not marginalized.
But why is that your goal? To what end? I mean, sure as hell is not their goal, you know? I mean, you're going, oh, we want to have freedom and justice and fair and everything for everything. They go, oh, you're assuming that that's what we want. I mean, are you got, you know, jurisdictions and cities going, oh, well, hell, we have the same goal.
Yeah, so we don't ask them. We ask the people themselves, and then we work running ballot initiatives alongside local groups. Yeah, we don't ask for permission.
All right. Amen, brother. All right. When we come back in just a little bit, that's what we'll do. So how did Freedom Fest go for you? Everything all good?
Yeah, it went great. Yourself?
Yeah, no, I got to meet with, but it was a little too Trumpy votey for me, but you know, whatever. You know, stuff happens.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, Aaron Hamlin, Election Science. .org. Yeah, you know, we're gonna, you know, rule you better with this thing, you know. And I'm going, yeah, okay. Well, give me, you know, if we're gonna do this Democratic Constitutional Republic thing, where the Democratic part elects the Republic part that's bound down by the Constitution part. Okay, I can probably live with that. Is that what happens? Well, whatever. It goes fundamentally at the beginning of the people being able to express themselves. Well, they go, and then they get into what they call the Australian ballot. The Australian ballot, it changed it because they copied it from Australia or whatever. I'm not sure when, 100 years ago, they come up with this idea that we're going to the state. We are going to determine who gets on the ballot, how they get on the ballot, the ballot. You may choose from communist candidate A or fascist candidate B. That was the problem for me. I'm going, whoa, they eliminated competition before it could start. Then you get somebody that comes out and wants to, you know, break the mold, or they're being they're on the ballot and they're just, you know, crazy. Well, they want to, man, we need to make sure they don't get in, or we have a third party kind of, you know, be kingmaker, or we do, it's all constant because they can. That's why. So I'm going, all right, what if the people really had the ability to give their preference? And everybody kind of approval voting and going, yeah, whoever wins out of this is probably going to be somebody the vast majority of the people are going to support. Okay, let's give that a shot. Well, they're doing it. So, Aaron, tell us about how you got it on the ballot, where it's on the ballot, and then some of the future ballot efforts that it's going. What's the current election you're going to be part of?
Sure. So the first city that we looked at was Fargo, North Dakota. And Fargo, North Dakota, like a lot of cities, had an interesting election with a lot of vote splitting. So they had a six-way race for their commissioner race in 2015, and the winner won with 22% of the vote. So there were some red flags going up. And frankly, the commission itself was pretty embarrassed by it. And so they created a task force. And one of the
How many candidates did they have?
They had six candidates. It was a six-way race.
Okay, so the person that won got 22, and I'm like, all right, well, that's how you set it up. What did they expect was going to happen?
Yeah, yeah, they were pretty much inviting a catastrophe, all which right. is what happened. And so they created this task force to address this problem. And the
Why was it a problem so much? Because the guy was a Trump something? They didn't like him? The press, the editors? How did this guy get in? We gotta fix it? Is that what was going on?
It wasn't so much the individual who won. It was just how they won.
Right.
When you're using this choose one system and you get somebody who wins with 22% of the vote, it's not to say that that person is not a good winner. It's just to say that you have no idea because there was vote splitting all over the place. There's no way to tell.
Got it.
So they were embarrassed by this and they didn't want it to happen again. So this task force that they created, its job was to look at different voting methods to come up with a solution. And one of the people from that task force had reached out to us and said, hey, I've heard about this approval voting stuff that you guys are doing. I think it would be a good fit for our community.
How did they hear about it? What had you been doing? They just did a search engine? I mean, you know, how did they even find you?
Well, when you look online for different voting methods,
boom,
we come up.
All right.
Yep.
Got it.
Yep. So they were able to find us. We recommended approval voting to them. And this person got the rest of the task force on board. So the task force itself was excited about approval voting for their city, and they recommended it to the commission. And I'm sure you can only guess what the commission's response was.
Yeah, the hell no. And this is like would get people approval and not what we want, and hell no. So I'm going, all right, the mechanism. See, I was starting to get worried here that you had a government task force putting this on the ballot or something. So how did it make it? So what did they say and how did it make on the ballot?
Yeah. So as you would expect, the commission itself just sat on its hands for a year while the task force kept telling them over and over again that this was a good solution for their community. And so the person on the task force that had reached out to us, he was not very excited about that. And so he said, you know what? I'm not going to take that as an answer. What I'm going to do is I'm going to get everyone I know, and we're going to gather signatures, and we're going to get this on the ballot, regardless of what the commission says. And that's exactly what they did.
Well, Fargo's a small community, and depending on the requirement, a percentage based on, you know, I don't know, statewide, citywide, mayor, race, blah, 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 it would be signature requirements probably weren't a billion. These small communities, I mean, Glendale's a community of, God, I don't know, 100,000. I mean, it's enough, and it was only like 1,800 signatures I needed. How many signatures did you need for Fargo?
It was between 2,000 and 3,000. So it was a manageable
really?
Number. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, what's the population in Fargo?
120,000.
Damn. So you had, a chore, you know, did you pay for them, have volunteers, you know, how long did it take you to collect the signatures?
Fortunately, the signature drive was able to be done all volunteer. There were some, free food involved, from the folks locally.
At least.
Yeah. And so this person, Jed Lemke, who was part of the task force and wound up getting this on the ballot, we helped him form a local organization called Reform Fargo. And so he did the education campaign with Reform Fargo, and we did the education campaign alongside their advocacy campaign.
Okay. This is one thing I've never been about. Spending a bunch of money trying to convince people over the campaign. Hell, having it on the ballot is the campaign. And the other side, man, they put notices in your water bill. They were illegal as hell using taxpayer money to inform and what. And by the time it got in the primary, there was more than 50% voted for each of the candidates. So there was no campaign for candidates on the general election. The only thing on the general election ballot was this manual validation accuracy election thing that we did. And what happened was they sent out the municipal, you know, employees of the early, and they did everything and it still got almost 40%. And I go, wow, and I didn't spend any money. Ha, you lost. I go, really? Is that what you think happened? You know. So on this, you do this, just getting it on the ballot, I would think, This is a tough hurdle for them to get over. What was the opposition's campaign against it, and what was the end percentage in the vote?
Sure. So fortunately, there wasn't a lot of coordinated opposition. There were maybe a few people who had stature within the community that weren't excited about this. One, as you might imagine, was the person who won with 22% of the vote. He was not excited for a new voting method that would require a more consensus-style winner. The former governor was opposed to it, and there was a local academic who was opposed to it. But we got a lot of people supporting it, and the local paper wound up publicly endorsing it. And in the end, we wound up winning that initiative with 63.5% of the vote.
Was that a surprise to them?
I think they may have been a little bit surprised. We had done some polling initially, and we found that the biggest obstacle was just letting people know about this. So a big part of our job was just educating the voters, let them know that this was an option that was going to be on the ballot, what was going to happen. And once they knew that, they tended to support it 2-1.
All right. You mentioned St. Louis. That's a bigger town. You do this election for this small town to select this is when? This November?
The city of Fargo is going to use approval voting for the first time in the general election of 2020.
Okay, so they already voted for it. It's done.
Yeah, they voted for the initiative. The initiative
passed.
All right,
there will be more detail when we come back.
Real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire.
Okay, yeah, I want to make sure that people understand that this is going to be the mechanism, the method by which the 2020 election cycle is going to be decided in the city of Fargo.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's just for municipal elections.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll make that clear. But are there any other – see, this is what happened. In the 90s, we were, you know, big election fraud guy went to town on it. And we went through the logic and accuracy test and how that's done. We did with the software and how they put it in the dog and pony shows that they do. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? I got so many election stories. It is just, it's horrendous. And people have taken the ball because I was not, once I realized, okay, we're on the bunch of other stuff. But the a lot of people here in Arizona have taken that and, you know, built it into things. And I have them on and we help and all that. And they go national and expose all these problems. So I'm going, all right, well, the fraud on approval voting, that could be frauded too, right? I mean, you know, you got to have accurate, you know, counting of it. I don't know if that make it easier on its software. So, you know, you still got to be attuned to that. But just to have the conversation, and I'm wondering what kind of budgets are you looking at? We got to pay you to come help. We got to come up with our own funding for blah, blah, blah. You're willing. I mean, what is your role? Why are you doing it? What's your continuation into the future?
Yeah, so when we look at the individual city that we're targeting, we normally provide a grant to help them with the getting it on the ballot. And then following from that, we work through a budget depending on what the population is and the number of voters that we have to reach out to.
Oh, so you're part of the actual campaign too?
Yeah, we do the education portion, and then our partners do the advocacy portion.
The what portion?
Advocacy portion.
Okay. Well, okay. So this is 501c34 crap.
That's right.
All right. So the money that you get people promoting this, that comes from Z, Putin, what?
We have individual donors, and our organization is really transparent. So on our annual reports, we list all of our donors. And we have a transparency page even that this.
Well, who are these people? They're just individuals, or they're a corporation of this, or CEO of I Want Better, you know, America? I mean, what?
Most of them are individuals. A large portion of our funding recently has come from the Open Philanthropy Project.
The what project?
Open Philanthropy Project.
The hell's that mean?
They. Let me bring up their website to make sure.
They have a bunch of rich guys with some projects that they go, yeah, and I want, yeah, I think that's a good idea. And they start throwing money. It's Patreon.
It's organized by some high wealth individuals who are excited about maximizing the impact of people's givings and basically improving people's lives in efficient ways.
I'm hip. You know, the rich people can do what the hell they want. I remember it was called Emily's List. And what Emily's List was just a woman that had a bunch of people, and they just kind of did block contributions. They would send them checks for $5, $10, but they sent it to them, and then they would package it and send it to whatever, like it came from them. It really came from these individuals, but they kind of directed it. And so it's kind of an online version of that. That was like snail mail back in the day and so on. So it's an influence of a group that has this to say about that. Okay, I get it. So do you think you've tapped into a revenue stream of enough people are concerned about this kind of thing that they're going, yeah, I think they deserve a little bit of money? All right, let's talk about that when we come back. Here we go.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
What's wrong with the world, mama? People living like they ain't got no mamas. I think the whole world's addicted to the drama. Only attracted to things that'll bring the trauma. Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism. But we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA. The Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate. And to discriminate only generates hate. And when you hate, then you're bound to get irate. Yeah, madness is what you demonstrate. And that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love just to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all,
people
y'all.
People killing, people dying. Children hurt and you hear them crying. Can you practice what you preach? And would you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us. Send some guidance from above.
Where is the love? Right here on Declare Your Independence. From Ernest Hancock, we're looking for love. Love of what? Freedom. You know, leave me aloneism. You know, having the ability to, you know, the promise that was made. The Declaration of Independence, why this show, Declare Your Independence. Because the proper role of government is what? Defense of individual rights. When it doesn't do that, it's time to alter or abolish. It is your right. It is your duty. This was the mindset that this country was based. They go, yeah, but it's a living document of God. Yeah, boom. What was the freaking deal? What was it? We had a revolution. People died. You go through all the, yeah, we're here and free and peace out. Yeah, we're going to do it a little different kind of, and then we'll lie to you and make it up and kind of, and the voting is all jacked up. And I'm going, nope. There has to be legitimacy. The future is all about credibility in the information that you get out, what talking head on TV you're going to listen to, what politician, do they got credibility? And how do you determine that? Well, information. How do you express yourself? Well, your vote. I'm going, you know, these are all fundamental basic stuff that's been hijacked for whose benefit? You know, is it for you? Is it for them? It definitely ain't for me. So I'm going, nope. We got to fix this thing. So now we have some alternatives, and I've participated in ranked choice voting for different offices and so on, and Libertarian Party stuff, and we've done different things, kind of, boom, and it came out what they didn't want. And, whoa, we don't want to do that anymore. It didn't work the way we wanted. Well, that might happen here, too, because we don't know what the public's view is. We don't know what the approval voting will generate. We don't know. We haven't had a large enough, big, giant enough impact of, oh my God, do we really want that? Well, they want what they got, or it would be something different. They want what they have right now. How do you get in an alternative to where the people are represented more? How do you do that? I don't know. We can do initiatives. So tell us about the other cities you got. You had to vote 60-something percent. You're the next election cycle in Fargo, North Dakota. I remember the movie Fargo. So we have Fargo, North Dakota is going to be voting in 2020 in the municipal local elections this way. And boom, here we go. If they even have it. Has anybody filed suit to stop it or complaining about it?
No. It looks like it's a clear path.
Boom. Now we got St. Louis. Now tell us about that.
Yeah. So St. Louis, there they have closed primaries right now. And the issue there was, again, a lot of vote splitting, similar situation that we see over and over again. And they wanted to address that. Well, when you can choose as many candidates as you want, approval voting addresses that directly. And so we have a local group there, St. Louis Approves, that we're working with. Right now, they're working on ballot access, gathering signatures. They have a larger signature number that they need to get to. The requirement is 10,000, but they have to shoot for 20,000 just in case a lot of things are contested, signatures that don't go through. And so the aim for this is to have it on the ballot for mid next year in 2020.
Okay. This is what I'm writing down here. I got an idea. I got a question. What happens if there's just one candidate and they go, you know, most people didn't check that box. Is it go unelected? Is that a NOTA? What if there's just two candidates? Well, I go, either one's good. You know, a lot more single shot this guy than this guy, so that guy wins. So tell me about the one and two candidate slots.
So here, and also it's important to note that the way that this is being implemented in St. Louis is a little bit different than in Fargo. In St. Louis, what we have to do there is a nonpartisan open primary where the top two people who get the most approval votes go to the general election. And then in the general election, you just choose between those two. But you're using approval voting in the nonpartisan open primary.
Okay, but in the general, they're just getting, they're voting for one or the other. They're not doing the approval thing.
Correct.
Which you can do. I like this approval thing with one candidate. You know, I go, nobody. You know, done, next. I that's a NOTA thing. I'm all over that. So you can use this approval voting to also have a NOTA option. You know, I'm good with that. If you got two candidates and they had more people not voting for either than either one, then they're both disqualified and you start again. That'd be awesome. All right. They don't want to do that, I imagine. No. You don't want to talk about it. All right. So here we have St. Louis is going to do it a little bit different, because here in Arizona, you have what they call the direct primary, which is done on the state level, but you have nonpartisan races just open in the elections for municipalities. Because in the city of Phoenix, you'll have, you know, a gazillion people and the top two go to the election and it doesn't matter. In a primary election, it's called a direct primary, which isn't supposed to have anything to do with parties and they change, whatever. But you have the only way to have your name printed on a general election ballot is if you went through the primary ballot. So you got to qualify for the primary. Then, however, they pick the top, whatever, goes to the general election, you have an election. Approval voting, I would think here in Arizona, the way this is set up, certainly on a municipal level, it's not going to really require anything other than how they count them, you know? So I'm, and that you can vote for more than one. So they already have that, but when you can vote for two state representatives or four commissioners or, you know, that kind of crap, water board or some BS. So there's really no mechanical impediment. What's the impediment that you come up against? Now, Fargo was looking for something to solve this. Was St. Louis, you know, why were they approaching you?
Yeah, so St. Louis was approaching us for the same, very similar reasons to why the folks in Fargo had, and that was they were getting election after election where someone was winning their primary with just a sliver of the vote. And again, like, it's not to say that that person who wins in that election is a bad winner. It's just to say that when you do an election that way, you've got no idea whether that person is actually the best qualified candidate.
Well, qualified by what? Opinion of the voter. I mean, you know, that's, you know, I can see approval of the voters as a, you know, qualified or better. Now, that's a whole nother thing, you know. But, you know, I'm going, you know, people don't necessarily pick the best candidates. But the, but this is a mechanism by which they get their preference, you know, demonstrated in approval. So is this starting to take off? Once you start, you know, having a couple elections, man, you're going to be a viable option if everybody wants to pay attention and give you more money.
Yeah, that's what we're aiming for. So Fargo, we had to show a proof of concept there because this is a voting. So this was a voting method that had never been implemented anywhere before. So we got initial funding at the end of 2017. Within less than a year of getting our initial funding, we made Fargo happen. A voting method that had never been implemented anywhere in the U.S., less than a year after initial funding. And now we're looking at St. Louis. It's scaling up, replicating, going from 120,000 population to over 300,000.
Okay, now was that from an official from the government of? You had a task force of we're going to approve or you're allowed to talk to us? I mean, you know, are you always going with some elected official's approval to move into their city? Or what's your criteria?
So the task force was a citizen-led task force in Fargo, North Dakota. It wasn't a government-led task force.
Well, did they have offices in city council? Were they approved? Did they have a budget? Did they, I mean, you know, how much of a separation between the government and this task force was there?
Okay. So this was just appointed by people from the commission in Fargo. But in St. Louis, no task force or anything. It was just a bunch of committed citizens from the community of St. Louis who were upset about the way that they're
voting. I got a bunch of committed, upset people here. You ready to rock? We'll talk about it.
So you've signed the Shire system?
Yeah, hell yeah. If that's all you need, shoot. You know, that's all you had to say. We're going to go ahead and do some ass whipping. How would we set up a, you know, you need a Zoom conference call, talk to some people, do kind of whatever. I tell you the big thing is I can get you, I'm going to have one of the staff do a initiative requirement numbers, population, law on what the requirements are for putting them on the ballot. Now, here in the Valley in Phoenix, there is a lot of smaller community. That's why I did Glendale. It was like the second biggest and just be a butthead. But the but I didn't live there. We did it under name of a friend of mine. Now, what happens is we have Phoenix, Scottsdale, Tempe, Mesa, Gilbert, Chandler, Peoria, Avondale, Glendale, Sunset. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And each one is varying populations and laws on this. And you get one. And certainly when they have, yeah, we're all pro-Trump or anti-Trump or what do they think they're going to benefit from, you know, they'll be all over it. So I'm for getting you involved here. What do we got to do?
So we have another attorney that we're working with that is actually looking at state by state to figure out the logistics. So they figure out if there are any kind of quirky laws within the state. Like, for instance, Missouri, they actually require you to choose as many candidates as there are seats to be filled in the general election, which is why we had to set it up a little bit differently in Missouri compared to Fargo.
Wait. Say that again. As many candidates as seats to be. What are you talking about?
So there, they basically require to choose only one candidate for the general election in St. Louis, which is why we had to move it to the primary where we use the approval voting.
Oh, okay. I get it. All right.
So there's some quirky things that we have to look at before going into a particular place.
One thing that I'm interested in is, and we can work with you and make sure it's something you support, because I don't care. You know, I just like, you know, the general concept of people having more influence. But here in Arizona, it looks like probably September sometime, about the end of September, we're going to be announcing some, at least one initiative that we're going to be focusing on to bring attention to whatever. And the main thing that we're doing is this occupancy permit. You know, if it pleases the crown, may I occupy my own land? I mean, you know, that kind of thing. So, well, no, you can live on this sidewalk here in a tent and crap on the side, but you can't put a tent on your own freaking land. You're not allowed. I'm like, what? So we're going to have fun with that. So we're focusing on that, but that doesn't mean at the same time we can't have something like this, because while they're out gathering or getting influence on that, might as well have another piece of paper or what? That might be the draw. Because one of the things when we did in the 90s, we had unrestricted concealed carry, which now Arizona has, and that started from an information campaign with our group called SAFE. Second Amendment is for everyone. Are you a safe gun owner? Are you an unsafe legislator? You know, that kind of thing. So we had fun with that, and that bring a bunch of people over to sign the other stuff. So either one of these could complement each other, and we get signatures for this is a statewide, this is a community. So we go to this city and town and do most of our signatures there, so we get the other one, blah, blah, blah. So I'm within 6 weeks, we're going to have a plan on doing something like this. So I need, if we're going to do it, it's soon. We need to be talking with something, how you want to do it. You want to Zoom it? You want to come out? How you want to do it?
Yeah, so our director of campaigns and advocacy, I can get him on a call with us to see logistically what we can do. And like what kind of timeline makes sense in order to be able to run a campaign.
We got time, just to talk about it, just see what your options are, because, I know election law here. All right, here we go.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
right. Aaron Hamlin and I'm interested. I want to hook him up with some people and get some attention and love over here in Arizona IA because something needs to be shook up. Yeah, just shake it up. We're doing other initiative stuff we're planning on. This could be part of and focus on our statewide or county, whatever, in some little community. And as a side effect, we got all the signatures for this. We put that on. You know, we can do that. We have to do that. So I just to cause a consternation of going to get some, because I can see that throughout my activist career, have I been doing this for 30 years, it was obvious to me from the beginning. There's all kinds of tape of me as a young man sitting there going, it's election law. 44 election laws. I challenged all the way to the Ninth Circuit. I'm my own attorney. I got an opinion. I got an argument. Let's do it. Now, the thing was, is I understood what it was. In the late 70s, they took the entire Title 16 and they threw it in the trash, which is the election laws, and they did it under the name of anti-communism. They put in there that it is illegal to have a communist party in Arizona, which is a whole other First Amendment thing. But I'm going, and they go, well, you're not going to vote against that, are you? Well, they his whole package of they rule us. It was the most amazing thing I ever saw. 44 election laws I challenged and got a whole bunch changed or whatever. But their desire was still the same. They had different mechanisms to do it. They had different ways of doing it. They had different, you know, forces of evil doing it for the media and the state of and the clerk of and the counting of the stuff and where the ballots are and how they did it and who in the feed of the wire live into the county computers from the World Trade Center. We rule you. So it's not a secret to me. I am not under any illusion that this is going to be for me, unless we can change the foundational part of. We haven't really addressed how they're getting counted in the accuracy of the software. That's another thing. So we'll worry about that later. But the actual mechanism by which people get to have approval. This guy doesn't suck so much. And I could probably do with her. And she's not so bad. You know, whichever one of them wins, I'm good. Basically, that's what's happening, right, Aaron?
That's right, yeah.
All right. So the politicians, as this is progressing, are you getting a different feel from the actual office holders that had to get there by voting than you are the citizenry or some task force or something? Is there a line between these two people, their opinions?
Right now, we're working on the folks who are currently elected to build up support there, in addition to the community itself. So we don't neglect anyone, but at the end of the day, it's the people's choice.
I'm wondering how this is going to. This is going to be an interesting experiment. It's a different way of campaigning. You know, it's got. I remember there was a large corporation I worked for in the 80s. And the big thing where they had a new CEO coming in, that's a big vote. They're going to a shareholder meeting, blah, 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 blah. And the guy that won was everybody's second choice because they go, oh, it's this guy, they're going that well. But everybody kind of approved of this guy. You know, we got this guy. He was lower on the radar screen. People didn't pay that much attention, but he had a much wider base of support, but he wasn't the front runner up here, but he wound up winning. It was approval voting. They didn't do that, but that's basically what happened. Everybody's second choice. So I'm going, okay, this is because once you go through rounds and so on, their guys drop off, that guy wins. It happened in the Libertarian National Convention. You heard Aaron Russo and Nolan and these guys, they're going out, oh, Michael Badnarik won. Why? He's everybody's second choice or first by that time it came to voting. But so I can see, what do you think is going to be the change in America once this happens? Will it change anything? Are we going to have, you know, the will is going to be less budget spending or something? What's your goal?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest changes is going to be a lower barrier to entry for new ideas. So right now, the barrier to entry for new ideas is basically controlled by the people who are in office. Because it's really, you don't get anywhere unless you're very embedded within the status quo. Yeah. As an example of that, we did a poll in 2016 looking at the presidential election. And within that, the winner didn't change in that. But when we look at the Libertarian and Green Party candidates, they did much better in terms of their support. So for instance, Gary Johnson, under our current choose one method, he gets like 3% support. And so he was able to be marginalized. He wasn't in the debates. Many times the media ignored him. But under approval voting, he gets 21% support. And that sounds like a lot, and it's a whole lot more than what he got. But if we add on top of that the fact that earlier in 2016, there was a Gallup poll that asked people whether they even knew who Gary Johnson was. And 2/3 of people said that they didn't even know who he was. So imagine this positive feedback loop where we're doing polling using approval voting, and people learn about who this person is, and then he's able to gain momentum. Whereas right now, there's no opportunity for that.
Yeah, what's the influence of philosophy like a party designation? So anybody that doesn't know Gary Johnson, they're kind of, this libertarian thing. Everybody, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting some politician telling you how libertarian they are. Okay, so this is going to be just a libertarian party. Everybody, R's and D's, we give libertarian our approval second vote. I go Democrat or libertarian, or they go Republican or libertarian. All of a sudden you got libertarians winning. They go, oh, hell no, this did not work the way we wanted. I mean, is that going to come up? Because if it does, and you got some third party kind of man, they're going to freak the F out, and you're so freaking not allowed. Okay. So what do you think is going to happen?
There can be pushback over time. This is something that we're just starting with and getting implemented in cities. But after it's implemented, we're making sure that we keep our foothold and that we're able to fight these obstacles. So far, we haven't had anyone that's been able to shut us down.
It's not like they won't try. Well, at least you understand that you need like twice the signatures, because you know that's where they get you. Here in Arizona, it's always a single issue thing. Yes, it's ranked choice and it's done on white paper. You put white paper and right, that's a multiple issue. You're not allowed. I mean, you know, there's always some crap, so you need to be careful in how you word it and so on. But just to even keep it on the ballot. So I am interested in getting in line with some activists here that would be able to support, maybe some politicians that would be able to give a little up here. How do we work this out? How are we going to meet? How are we going to do this?
So if you're in terms of getting this done in different communities, say we're looking at, say, Phoenix, for example, in Arizona, the way that we normally do this is we look at the local rules for the state and the city. Just figure out if there are any kind of quirks in the state or local law. And then it's getting it on the ballot through a local organization. Normally, the local organization that we work with is incorporated as a 501c4. We tend to prefer that they have some experience already doing initiatives, that they're well connected with other key stakeholders within the community. And then we move from there.
Yeah, we've done dozens of initiatives. We did 36 one year. You know, we have a newspaper called Citizens Take an Initiative where we print the initiative and the arguments for it and all that kind of stuff. The I'm looking right now the initiative requirements for City of Phoenix. I'll find it. Yeah, oh, here it is. And I want to get an idea of what your kind of budgets that you're looking at, people doing this. Because when you're looking at, say, if you went paid and it's $5,000, just to even get it on, you're looking at $20,000 on a bigger city. You know, on a smaller city, free. I mean, you know, I don't know. You know, what are you guys looking at?
I mean, for example, for St. Louis is over 300,000 people. The signature requirement there is 10,000, but you got to double that.
Yeah.
So 20,000 at $5 a signature, that's $100,000 just for signatures.
And let's see, prior to the beginning of any political activity pertaining to initial referendum recall, a statement of organization must be filed with the clerk, yada, yada. So then you're going to need somebody that doesn't. Usually what they do is a statement of organization on the state level, they want a PAC. So you need to have a chairman and a treasurer. And this is something that I was willing to challenge if I gave a crap, because I'm going, in this petition, your government for redress of grievance, this First Amendment, I got to have a treasurer? I go, whoa. I want to petition the government to do something. I can't do it as an individual. I have to have somebody do it with me. Where the hell did that come from? Because they want an organization. They want a bank account. You know, they want that. So there's a whole bunch of stuff to challenge. And I'm kind of moving away from this election thing, other than something like this, to demonstrate it can be fixed, work, or it can't. and I definitely need to know if it can't. I just want to know, you know, what's all the consternate crap they're going to do? Well, we're going to see in 2020 Fargo, this approval voting that we got from Aaron Hamlin, electionscience.org. You'll probably be hearing about it more.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom.
Boom. All right. This is, I'm interested in this, and I need to know what your time availability is and who and what and send and contact and somebody call and let's go get it done. Because it election advocacy has been a big thing here for, God, 25 years plus. And I put this in and that you guys actually have it on and something like this, they're going to go, yeah, maybe, you know, because ranked choice voting is, it may be better or not, I don't know, but it's definitely way more complicated and it's not as easy, you know, to use existing systems to where this is just, you know, it's not really that different, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So who we need to talk to? Is it you? Is it the lawyer of what?
So I can set up a meeting with us and our director of campaigns and advocacy.
Okay. Now we have a vaccine education summit that we're helping, our second one that we've done over the years. We do a freedom summit. We have a Bitcoin summit. We have, you know, different, you know, things that we do since 2001, like Ron Paul has spoken at three of them. I mean, so it's a thing. Now the deal is that, this is the second time we've done this vaccine education thing. Cause I saw what was coming back when, Vax and Del Bigtree was on the show and we need to get this. I wasn't even anti-vax. It was just getting educated. Well, they freaked the F out. Well, we're doing it again September 28th. At that time, then when that's done, September 28th, then my time opens up a lot planning for 2020. So mm-hmm. I would think either there'd be a lot of the guys will be there, you know, helping with, we do audiovisual and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm going, by then, we need to have a plan. Over the next 2 weeks, starting tonight, from the 8th to the 22nd, a graphic design guy is coming in. We spend 2 weeks, three, four times a year that we're just head down plow. We write more letters to Captain Mark. We do some more artwork. We got the campaigns, but he does a lot of the art. I could incorporate this in and have meetings in the next couple of weeks of getting people started with this mindset, a concept of let's do this. The reason is because I think it will generate enormous amounts of attention. In Fargo, what kind of local press attention did you get on it?
Yeah, so we were in Vox, Reason Magazine, and all the local press.
Yep. So there's a bunch of benefits to this. And it's not, this is what I'm going to do. When Donna sends you the show, and it'll have the link with all the, you know, the video and audio, and you can do what you want. You know, when she does that, please respond to when after, what's the next, when are you going to get some kind of movement in St. Louis? Are you starting collection? Or you got turning in initiative?
We're doing the group that we're working with is doing signature gathering right now. Their aim is to deliver their signatures in November.
Okay. I don't want to wait that long, but we should probably talk about it. Go ahead and have include this show with which has the, you know, the breaks and all we've been talking. So she told you that, you know, we record all this stuff and we're streaming now. So go ahead and inform your legal guys and your petition guys and whatever the guys that it's always freaking Arizona, man. I mean, they come here. It's, you know, woohoo! It's a red state, and Janet Napolitano and Sheriff Arpaio and, you know, the BATF and the, you know, immigration and the guy in the eminence and John McCain, and we always gotten Kirsten Sinema come to proof of government. It's always left and right, freaking Arizona. Woohoo! We have some fun here, and you get a lot of attention. The Levolution started here. I don't know if I told you. You know, I'm the one that designed the Ron Paul Levolution logo and all that stuff. That came out of here, Arizona. So there's all these guys. Men are all up. Woo! Let's go get some. So if you can convince your guys to even talk to us, and I get you the right people. Yeah, a few thousand signatures is not that big a deal for us. So I'm going, all right, we've done it before. Now, then they go, yeah, but we want a bigger, let's do Phoenix. All right. Well, you want to do Phoenix, but we got other smaller communities we could work with on this too. So we need to decide that and what kind of money, you know, we have available from you guys and here, and what activism that we can do, because, you know, those signs and everything during the Love Lose got made somewhere by somebody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we know what to do. We got pirate man. Ooh, we need to get all pirated up. You know, do pirates vote? I don't know. Let's find out. So this is going to be some fun. Don't forget about me. Please respond to the email that we send you with some contact information of who we should be talking to, and I'll hook you up with the right guys and let's get a conversation going.
Yep, that sounds good.
And we'll get you the information on city by city and state of the applicable laws and what the requirements are, because they keep changing. Since I looked, I know they changed them.
We tend to prefer to go after larger localities to be able to take advantage of economies of scale. But when we do that, we can look at neighboring cities as well.
Yeah, no, you're going to get plenty of Phoenix attention if you just did Tempe. You know, Tempe is Arizona State University, right in the middle of the valley of kind of, man, you can piss off a bunch of people for less. Or, you know, I think Phoenix is like, it keeps changing. I mean, it was like 6,000, 12,000. I mean, you know, it goes up, but a big millions of people, you know, city like Phoenix, and it only takes 10,000 signatures or, you know, 15,000 or whatever like that.
That's great.
That might be doable.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's the same kind of signature budget for that city for a population that's over three times St. Louis.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Phoenix is, we had, I'll give you an example. In the winter, the end of 2002, I think it was, I filed an initiative at Phoenix. And what it did is that the city of Phoenix, it was a charter change that the city of Phoenix shall never raise taxes from internet sales. Okay. It was just not an internet, you know, product, Amazon tax kind of thing. So when I did that at the end of 2002, of course, the clerk and all the Ernie, we don't have any plans to do that. I'm like, yeah, right. You know, now. Okay. So what happened is, we just had it sitting there because you have a three-month, 90-day window of valid signatures. You can't, like, collect them and then they'd be good, you know, a year later. So it's like a three-month period that you have. That is one of the quirks here. So I'm going, okay. So we just said we didn't collect signatures. It's just sitting there waiting. Waiting. Go ahead. Try and implement it. Go ahead. And it held them off for over a decade. And they're just like, and then finally they changed the law in some way that I had to undo that initiative. You know, they go, nope, you can't be in here anymore. You're just a thorn in our side because we know Ernie's going to. I'm going, yeah, you damn Skippy. So by then, when we hit crypto and so on, I go, okay, doesn't matter anymore. We can bypass all your crap. You know, now what? You're like, oh, we hate those damn libertarians. So I can see a whole bunch of other benefits other than, do you collect all the signatures? Did you bypass all of the legal challenges? Is it going to be on the ballot? What kind of vote? I mean, just every single step that we do, we guarantee we win before we even start it. And I don't give a shit what they do. So then they want to go to court. Good. We got plenty of attorneys and go in there and we'll say this about that. And we get more press. Who did what? Why? You see my point? So me, I don't give a shit what their computers say in the end of the election. I don't believe them anyway. But I understand the attention you get. That's why I ask what kind of attention you got by even doing this. That's what's going to happen here. You're going to get learnified and it greases the skids for you and things that you learn for other communities. Maybe even in here in Arizona, people go, hey, pick us. We'll do it in our small community or what the hell. 2 years ago, they had the League of Cities and Towns. They finally got the 99th community, municipal corporation, 100% of everybody. They're on the town manager, you know, the city clerk, county, you know, the city attorney, the city municipal judge of the, you know, city attorney, and the police chief, and we got four or five positions, and we rule you. And it doesn't matter who you elect, because this is what's happened. You get people during the Love of Lucy, all these Ron Paul supporters, they get elected to, you know, mayor or vice mayor or city council in some small community, and they say, I want to see the budget. I want to know what the petitioners are getting. I want to know, nope, not allowed, can't see it. Town manager run, you're not allowed. I'm like, what? So when you get some other alternative, it's not working the way it is. We get this. I get benefits from the campaign on so many other levels. That's why I want to do this. I don't really care. I mean, it'd be nice if it gets passed, whatever. Don't care. I get a win on every freaking step of this. When they challenge it, people get educated, whatever, and it'll make it better for you. That's what I offer to help with.
And then the other, in addition to coordination with a more experienced group, which sounds like which is something that you would bring, is also the funding as well. So for a population like one, so there's the signature gathering, and then for the campaign itself, one kind of heuristic for that is taking the population itself, and then half of that. So we take, say, the population is 1 million. That's 500,000 that you need for the education campaign, 500,000 that you need for the advocacy campaign.
You know, that is not my bailiwick. See, when things come in to, we do this stuff, we'll get millions of dollars worth of press. You know, that, the Levolution thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was nothing. The campaign tries to bring you in. I'm like, oh, talk to the hand. I don't have nothing to do. You're confusing me with somebody who even votes. That's not my goal. So when you have all this, you know, I'll get you millions of dollars worth of press with my, you know, $560 worth of signs. I mean, you know, you see my point? You know, that's what we do. And I can't do that being part of, well, the fill out the form of the whatever, and you got an in-kind contribution of you did and with your machine of blah, blah, blah. I don't care. I'm not playing that game. That's somebody else. So we'll get it going and so on. But yeah, I understand. Everybody's wanting to, you know, for the campaign. And I'm hoping that this initiative, it has its own support. I mean, just blatant, just on its face, and people go, yeah, I'd rather do that. You know, I mean, if you have to force it or bullshit people into it, it's not going to work anyway. You know, but so what did you think that the it was necessary to spend that much money on what you did in Fargo, or were people like, yeah, know that?
Yeah, so with Fargo, the big issue was making sure that people were hearing about it. I mean, we had we were repeatedly on the radio. The newspaper endorsed it. But on top of that, like, there were still a lot of people that we needed to reach. And in order to reach those people, like, we had to spend money to do mailers as well as digital advertising.
I understand. We do things a little differently. I mean, you know, we're like trash can flyers, you know. Yeah. We went through your trash, made you look. I mean, oh, now it's got QR codes, you know, little vinyl stickers. Silly status, taxes are for slaves on every gas pump while they're sitting there with their smartphone for 3 minutes filling up, and they go blip. And it's you want to get attention? You want people to know? Woohoo! That's me, okay? That has been me for 30 freaking years. You want to know how we get attention? We get, but you got to give me a good idea. It's got to be expanding freedom down to the individual. It'll just happen. So that's why, you know, when you talk about, we need a budget. I go, if you need that much money to educate, then it's the wrong freaking issue, in my opinion. Okay? But it always helps when they're going against you. All right. Erin, when Donna sends you this, I get the editing so I can get it to you. When we get it to you, include in the email a couple of people you think I should be interviewing and the type of people that we need to have at the meeting. You know, because I got, you know, a bunch of we'll do it up. And I just want to, you know, see what the criteria is for the guy. You're right. I think it will make a big change in how campaigns are conducted, and it will benefit the alternative voices, because libertarian, everybody, second choice is libertarian kind of thing. And if that happens, and we got this kind of voting on there, boom, we start getting changes in people in these positions. I guarantee it. What'll happen then, I have no freaking idea, but it's going to piss off all the right people, and I'm for that.
Excellent.
All right, peace, brother. Please respond to this, and when we get that information from you, we'll hook everything up, and we'll get us a meeting here before Halloween. You know, I promised Donna that I do all this crap before Halloween, and then Halloween to New Year's, I'm a good boy and playing grandkid and stuff, okay? So we need to do this sooner rather than later, all right?
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ernest.
All right, peace, brother. Bye.